You're listening to The Bounding Box, where we talk about web development, geo-development, and everything in between. All right, welcome to The Bounding Box. Today, I got a great guest here. I have one of my coworkers here. I have Omar. Omar, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do. What's your problem?
All right. Thanks for having me, Renee. I'm a product engineer at Esri, and I work on the ArcGIS Maps SDK for JavaScript components. And every now and then, I get into some arcade work as well. My problem, I'd say, is FOMO. I'm looking outside at the weather right now. It's beautiful. Want to get out there, but maybe after work.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. Yeah, so I Omar is one of my coworkers at Esri, and he pretty much keeps all the web component work honest. and he's being a little monster because he really is like the PE for all the web components outside of Calcite that we've got going on right now. And make sure all that stuff's kind of unified and together and hopefully working as we intend.
Yeah, and there's a lot involved with that. I wouldn't say I'm the only PE. There are others as well. And, in managing this project, you have to consider legal, you have to consider development and testing, which you're a part of with me on that. And then coordinating with different teams, documenting, reaching out to technical support, getting them caught up. And then, every step of the way, you're working with very passionate and motivated people, like you, Renee, of course.
Nice. So, Omar, what's your background? So for people that are listening, Omar's Canadian. So, that's not hold against him or anything. But what is your general background? What got you into mapping? I'm always interested in what gets people into maps and mapping in general.
Yeah, let's go all the way back to Canada. I'm in the U.S. right now, so let's start there. I was born and raised in Ottawa, so I did what you consider an associate's degree at a college. I did biotechnology, and that took about 3 years. And from there, I got an internship at one point, and that was my first exposure to GIS, where I worked in a rabies lab, and we plug in coordinates into a CSV file regarding outbreaks. And then there was a coworker at that lab that would take that data and put it into ArcGIS Pro. So that was my first exposure to GIS at the time. And then I didn't think much of it until I went to the University of Victoria in British Columbia. And that's when I saw GIS again. And they had this program that was a combined program in geography and computer science. And I thought that was a cool combo because once you get there, you realize how much IT is actually involved in GIS. And when you look at the course program, you see how much from computer science is relevant to geography, like relational databases, and then linear algebra as well. So if you work in remote sensing and you do image classification, a lot of that is our computer science concepts that come into play in GIS. So I thought that was really cool. So I graduated from that university and then moved on to Redlands for a little bit. To start on ArcGIS Online as PE, I started out on Arcade, and then with the Arcade Editor component, and that became part of the coding components package. I'm now in Washington State, hence why I have FOMO for the weather that's going on right now with all that sunshine, because it finally got sunny again. And yeah, that's my background.
Nice, man. I didn't know you had background in biotech. That's cool.
Yeah, I consider myself a scientist first, I'd say, and geography obviously has a lot of science involved. So I like the aspect of taking some code and helping automate some of that work that was done in, that you do in geography, that you do even in biology if you work in bioinformatics, things like that.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. So what have you found is involved in trying to keep a very large project like the web component stuff running smoothly?
Oh man, it is a massive project, and maybe we could talk a little bit about where these components came from in the first place, and then how they are where they are now. And typically you'd have there are different component teams or different app teams at Esri. So you have map viewer, dashboards, velocity, field maps, and so on, and then all these teams are using components. So this whole component project didn't just come into existence out of nowhere. Esri has a long history of using components. So, these components became shared, and then these components, became strategic to expose these to customers as well, so that they can have exposure to more, pre-built ArcGIS experiences that we've developed ourselves with the JS API. So once, they make their way down and we want to expose them to customers, then we go through different things like legal and checking out the dependencies of those packages, going through some development code reviews and then testing them out. We test out the components as if we're users ourselves. It's not just, okay, the components work in our apps, let's ship it out there. It's okay, how would people build apps with these components themselves? Because they're going to take components from different places that once existed in different app teams. So we need to make sure that everything's cohesive when it all comes together. And then obviously communicating with all these teams at the different levels. You have your PEs, you have your devs and your product managers and CTOs. And then documentation, obviously, there's a lot to talk about with components. This is a whole new world for a lot of people. Before, with the JavaScript API, it was all JavaScript, right? You created your HTML, view div container element, and then immediately you would jump into JavaScript, and that was it. There wasn't as much of an acknowledgement of the DOM tree and how that works, and what is an attribute versus what is a property? What does it mean when attributes are reflective? So there's a lot involved with how do we talk to people about components and this new programming pattern.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been a long journey. I mean, and we're still going, right? I mean, there's still a whole lot more left to do. We're learning a lot along the way too, just in terms of how to bring all these components and stuff together. And like you said too, I mean, it's just something new for users too. Users are so used to just kind of newing stuff up, right? Whereas you don't necessarily need to do that for a lot of things anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And one thing I'm really interested in is just seeing, what people build with this stuff too. Because, if you look at the map viewer, it's all components. And if we get this stuff into people's hands, when's somebody else going to create their own map viewer or
Yeah.
something, some sort of, duplicate that has similar features?
Think that's where a lot of it came out of. I mean, customers would see a small piece in Map Viewer, whether it be like the symbol styler, maybe, or some, like you said, like the code editor for arcade stuff in a Map Viewer or online. And they're like, no, that would be really useful in my application. And I don't want to rewrite that. Or I don't know how to rewrite that. Build my own thing. Is there any way you guys can provide that or something? So that's where a lot of these pieces came from, right? I mean, just the request from the need for them.
Yeah, and even one interesting path we're going down too is now talking as well about frameworks, which I know you're very passionate about as well. And I, on your YouTube channel, you have these different videos about, getting started with components of the JS API in general. Even before I started working at Esri, I remember seeing your blog about using the JS API in V. And yeah, that was kind of funny when I started working with you. I'm like, aren't you the blogs I used to follow about V? How to get started with V and JS API. And I think that's it's really nice we're going that direction. Because, for me, before starting at Esri, when I would look up different libraries for building applications, not just only in JS, I would look at if they had some sort of React wrapper, or if they had, depending on, what the job required of me, if I needed to use a framework or not, I would go look. And then if the requirement, especially if I had when I was at the government and there were cases where you couldn't use Node, I would have to know, okay, do I have to go the script tags way? And then if I go with script tags, then it's okay, I'm not going to work with the framework, it's all going to be vanilla JavaScript. Especially with, yeah, the JS API, you have AMD versus ESM, and so you have to work within those constraints. So it's kind of cool we're talking about all these different paths now that you can take depending on how you're building your application.
And that's a key part of things, because we've had a lot of requests over the years for a long time now to like build our own React components, for example, or our own Angular components. We have a large Angular user base, which I'm very surprised of, but Angular's very entrenched in a lot of places and people use it and stuff, right? If we had gone down the road of trying to have all these different components in these different frameworks and trying to just manage them all together, I mean, it'd just be a management nightmare in terms of trying to keep them all synced up and stuff. And
Yeah.
this future proofs us, right? Because we don't know what framework might become popular in the next couple of years or so. out of nowhere that, just will support web components, hopefully. You just hook them right in and they work.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and I forgot where I read this, but there was one website I scrolled on once, and it said, components will outlive your framework. And I really believe that because the components we write and the components that get exposed to customers, the underlying technology, we can change that. But at the end of the day, there's still components, and we'll still have those ways that you can use those components in the framework you'd like, because the components are web standard.
Exactly. And again, there's a lot of people that don't like web components just because they feel like it's missing a lot of pieces that frameworks and stuff give you, like state management or something like that, or just the way the event system might work and components and slots and shadow DOM and all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, if it's the lesser, well, I'm going to say lesser two evils. It is the most portable way to build a UI library or any UI components that can be used anywhere you want to use them, right? So, whether you look, however you look at it, it's just the best way to go.
And even myself, on my personal time, I work on and in my own GitHub. I use R components, and I use other web mapping libraries that exist out there. And a lot of my website is just MDX. And I try to write blogs or content as in as much MDX as possible, which is nice. I don't know how familiar the audience is with MDX, but it's just Markdown plus JSX, and JSX is just JavaScript plus HTML. So you can basically write code in a document and get it presented on a web page pretty easily. So then you don't have to have all these different files on how to display the content. It's just all in one file.
Nice. That's very cool. What do you think are the biggest benefits for users of web components? Just in general, they have to be users for our web components, but end users at all.
I really like the declarative first programming approach that we're taking with the components. We're trying to expose as much attributes and properties directly on the components, so then you don't have to go in under afterwards with yourself and step through and write all this boilerplate code. Because especially with if you're working with frameworks, a lot of the properties you can declare directly on the component, which simplifies a lot of your work. But even in HTML, if you have a lot of attributes exposed, that lowers the amount of JavaScript you'd have to write on the other side once you do your whole query selector and then adding your whole event listener and stuff like that. Another benefit I would say specific to ArcGIS is all the pre-built experiences we have. So for a lot of at these conferences, we meet customers who they're almost one person IT departments, one person development teams, and they're handling all these requests from their managers or whatever stakeholders. And it's like, I can't keep up this. I have to keep going to the JS API, looking at all the capabilities they have, and then building some UI for it, and maintaining that UI and updating that UI and upgrading it depending on your requests can be a lot of work. So the fact that we can expose all these different experiences to people and have them just in a way, eventually my hope is we'll have some sort of component library where you just look at what capability you want and you say, I want charts, I'm going to go grab some charts. I want some code editing experiences, I'm going to go grab a code editor. So that way you don't have to go create that on your own.
Nice. Yeah, I think people are really going to dig that. It's a huge benefit for users of our stuff out there. And another cool thing I want to ask about too is that one of the things that we use extensively in web components is Storybook. I think Storybook's been a great tool to use because at the end of the day, you can do all the testing you want, but you really don't know how these things behave until you use them, right? So you tell us a little bit about that, how you got the Storybook stuff set up and everything, and how that works for us.
Sure. I can start with the first challenge we had when we were going from the Arcade Editor component to the Coding Components package. So before we were part of this larger components project, we were doing a lot of our development and testing with Stencil. And my manager, Fred, would take that Stencil component, create an index.html file for it, and do his testing in an HTML file. But we found it wasn't really reactive. We weren't fully testing the whole component API reference. With the HTML files, you can just create what the user would see, but you couldn't see how the component would actually behave in a, you know, in a developer experience. Like when you're working in React and you want some reactivity, it's hard to verify the reactivity of a component through an HTML file. So we look towards Storybook for that. And with Storybook, you have all these nice add-ons and controls and interactions you can integrate in your component testing, so that you can strengthen the component API that the developer is going to eventually use. And so with the controls, we can just change the properties of a component or an attribute of a component just with some, you know, radio buttons or setting a string or setting a JSON. And that way it kind of simulates what you'd see when a developer goes and uses these components in React or Angular or Vue and HTML as well if they're big vanilla JavaScript developers. So this way we get a bit more coverage instead of in the past, I would take the component and then I would go by myself, create all these different samples. We now have a samples repository for getting started, but before that, I would create these samples internally with these frameworks, and then I would go in and test the component one by one in the frameworks for the reactivity, and that was time consuming. But then with Storybook, I could write one test case, and that would cover most of that work for me. I still go into those frameworks and verify things for the most part, but Storybook seems to cover quite a lot of that.
It's a great sanity testing tool, right? It's
Yeah,
amazing.
that's it. Even when we work together on components, myself and Renee, you know, he can publish his changes to the code, and I can say, "Oh, I verified it in Storybook. It looks great. It's reactive. This new component works as intended." And then once it's shipped out and it's, you know, in the beta in one of the releases on Next, I can see it, you know, for my own sanity. Yeah, it's still behaving as I intended with the tests we wrote.
Yeah, it's just such a great tool to use. And like you said, I still will fall back to like my dev mode if HTML file a bit just to get things working. But then I always have to go back to the Storybook and just verify because I know the Storybook works a little bit differently than I would do it in HTML and stuff. But it's going to catch all those little things like that, right? When things don't pop up right, or I might be missing a property somewhere, misspelled a property. I've done that before. In the HTML file.
Yeah, it happens, and I mean it's not the only testing in our system too. There's, yeah, we develop apps as well, as I mentioned. We're not only developers or engineers, we're also users of the products we're
Yeah.
building. So we try to cover as much as we can.
Tell me a little bit more about the samples repo people can check out.
Yeah. So the samples repo, we're trying something a little bit different than before. So we want to have more of the samples easily accessible through the developer site. And with that, we're taking advantage of, I think it's called Download Directory. It's an MIT licensed project on GitHub that you could use as well. And with that, people can download the samples directly as zip files instead of Git cloning them. And so that way on the developer site, we can just have a link, click here to download this template. And then immediately you're bootstrapped for everything you need.
Nice.
But the way the sample repo works at the moment, it's a monorepo to make it more maintainable. So we have syncpack in there for, you know, locking the dependencies to a specific version so that all the samples are aligned. We do a lot of testing of the samples all at once through the monorepo. Because as we add more component packages, it becomes harder to maintain. Before, with the JS API, you would just manage one template or one sample per framework for the JS API. But now, every time we release a component package, we want to do our due diligence and have samples available for users. And that's quite a lot. It adds up. Every new component package needs something like five or six samples.
Yeah, it's nuts. But I want to tell too the our use of syncpack, right? Which we use in our internal mod repo, we use it in that samples repo. I don't know if maybe NX has like another version of doing it. Maybe Lerna could do it as well if you're using Lerna. But syncpack is great because all of these packages in the mono repo still need to reference what packages they have dependencies on and stuff. And you may have someone that didn't update a package JSON from like 428 to 429 or a date of next, because the next versions have dates on them and stuff like that too. But that sync pack will make sure that everything's in sync, which is amazing. It's a huge benefit.
Oh, yeah, and especially with the samples repo, it's not only one or two people maintaining all that code. It, you know, you'd have the PE who's responsible for that component package in there making those changes. But we're all, the components underneath are all using ArcGIS Core and Calcite components, and we all have to be on the same version of those two dependencies.
Yeah. You just update in one spot. You just say, these are the versions that everybody should be using. And you can run that sync pack command with the dash dash fix, and boom, everyone's up to date and good to go. And then we can verify that any changes we made with the latest version still work, especially something like Calcite, where it is like the base UI library for everything that we do. We just want to make sure that these samples still look and behave the same way we expect them to, right? Which is huge.
Yeah, it's great. And we'll keep working with that samples repo to make it even better. For one, we're working on what we're calling ArcGIS Create, a CLI way to get started with components. So the way that would work is you'd run, you know, your command in NPM or Yarn, whatever environment you're in, and do your NPM init, and you know, you'd get started, pick your template if you want React, Angular, vanilla JavaScript, and then from there, you can choose map components or coding components or charts components. And so that way you don't really have to go to GitHub and do a whole clone to get your sample. You would just go in VS Code, for example, open up a terminal, say, I want to get started in React with map components, and you're all set, good to go.
Nice.
So that samples repo is going to keep getting improved with time, and we're going to use it to keep offering better experiences for people who want to get started.
Very cool. All right, Omar, well, I'm going to respect for your time here, but if you got any tips or tricks or words of advice for listeners, anything at all, not even have to be geo-related or dev-related or anything, anything you want to drop on people?
I would say make mistakes, obviously within reason, don't get fired. But when I'm programming, error messages for me are actually encouraging because they push me to dive deeper to really understand the code I'm working with and how it behaves. I think that's how I'm able to catch bugs quite well, because I'm actually trying to make errors happen to get the whole, to understand the API of what I'm using. Because if everything's perfect, that's nice, but I don't feel that I get that much out of it. I create a cool project, sure, but I don't really know more details about what I was working with.
Yeah, exactly.
How it behaves.
Nice. That's perfect.
So make mistakes.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm always you know, a little suspicious of something that I run the first time and it works. Like, I don't know if you really did what I expected you to do if you're working right away.
yeah, exactly. Like, the kind of have to overthink a little bit and wonder what's really going on here.
Awesome, Omar. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Bounding Box today. Please subscribe for more content.